morning in London, and as we came out of the tube, an amazing smell hit us. It was Burger King. Now, many of you might like Burger King. For me, as many of you know, I'm not a burger girl. I wouldn't touch a burger. I don't really like burger and chips, fast food, anything like that. But on that night, hunger did something to me. My appetite overruled, and I was straight in the queue. And so we queued up, and we got ourselves the burger, chips. We go back to our hotel room, put warm clothes on because we're absolutely freezing, and we sat there on the bed, champagne and Burger King. It never tasted so good. And it's amazing what your appetite will drive you to. Now, have you ever been in a car late at night, and you're driving home and you're in the passenger seat and it's late and you're coming home and you're just nodding off? You know that feeling? And then you just wake up, you're trying to keep the driver awake, then you're nodding off and you know you're just about to slip into delicious sleep. And there we are, there you go, you're gone. Completely gone. Hopefully not driving, but you're in the passenger seat. Or you're in a lecture or a classroom and you know you should be listening, but it's hot, it's stuffy, it was a late night, and you just feel your head hitting the desk. Well, this is where we catch up with Peter in Mark 14. Peter is trying to keep himself awake, but as hard as he tries, he feels sleep catching up on him. And so we catch up with him in Mark 14, verse 32. So here they are. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." But he took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and watch." Going a little further, he fell to the ground and prayed that, if possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father," he said, "everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Simon," he said to Peter, "are you asleep? Could you not watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak." Once more he went away and prayed the same thing. When he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. They didn't know what to say to him. Returning the third time, he said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Enough, the hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." Now, isn't it sad when we read this? To me, the loneliness of Jesus so comes across that there's Jesus wrestling in prayer. And after all his passionate promises at the Last Supper, Peter just can't stay awake for 1 hour. He can't stay awake. And Jesus explains to his friends, they can see that he's clearly distressed. He takes the three on their own, and he's sorrowed to the point of death. We see him saying to his Father, "Is there another way? Is there another way around this?" He didn't want to go to the cross. He was looking for an alternative. And in this distress, he says to his friends, "Just be here with me. I just at this moment, just before things are set in motion that will change the world, will you just be with me?" And yet, Peter just can't do that. After all he said, he's had a big dinner. It's late at night. And he's had this emotionally draining experience of the Last Supper, with Jesus foretelling his betrayal, and Peter's upset. The whole thing we looked at last week, washing his feet, "None of me, all of me." And then Jesus prophesying that Peter will deny him. And so Peter is overwhelmed emotionally, physically, and he just gives in to sleep. And three times, every time that Jesus comes back, Peter is asleep. He can't do one simple thing. And then suddenly the soldiers come and it's too late. And there's this lovely poem I found. Those of you a bit English and arty, you're going to enjoy this. The rest, bear with us. Here we go. "The grass never sleeps, or the roses, nor does the lily have a secret eye that shuts until morning. Jesus said, 'Wait with me,' but Peter slept. The cricket has such splendid fringe on its feet, and it sings, have you noticed, with its whole body, and heaven knows if it ever sleeps. Jesus said, 'Wait with me.' And maybe the stars did. Maybe the wind wound itself into a silver tree and didn't move. Maybe the lake far away, where once he walked as on a blue pavement, lay still and waited, wild awake. but old dear Peter, slumped and eyes closed, who could not keep that vigil, who how he must have wept, so utterly human, knowing this too must be a part of the story. And that poem to me speaks of the loneliness of Jesus, that even his friends at that time couldn't stay awake, but maybe nature itself was wildly awake, knowing of what was going to come. And although Peter couldn't stay awake, it's interesting how he kind of fell into this trap. And when Jesus said to them in the Last Supper, when he said, you'll all fall away, that word actually comes from a Greek verb called scandalizon, right? And that comes from a root word, scandalon. And that means the bait in a trap. And it was bait, like put on the end of a stick that would lure an animal in. And so when Jesus said to his disciples at the Last Supper, you will all fall away, what it actually means is you will all be entrapped. It's like being tripped up by some trick. And so when he was saying, you'll all fall away, you're going to be trapped, it was when he said, be awake, be alert, be with me, he was saying, be careful not to fall into the trap. Your bodily appetites will say, I'm hungry, I'm tired, it's night, I want to sleep, but be awake, don't fall in the trap. And yet they did. And for all Peter's promises, he forgot and he wasn't alert. And all that Jesus was asking for was him to be there. And the danger is this, Peter forgot his human weakness. It was all, I'll be there, I'll do it, all passion, all promise. And he forgot that he was just human. And sleep overcame him, and his natural appetites entrapped him. Now, it's an interesting thing about our appetites. God gave us certain appetites because it's part of being human. It's to remind us. So, you know, we feel hungry, it's to remind us to eat, because if we don't eat, we'll get sick and eventually die. Also, when we feel sleepy, that's a reminder to tell us to go and have a rest or go and sleep. So we have these natural appetites to sleep when tired, eat when hungry, the instinct to protect ourselves from heat or the cold, sex drive to glue marriages together and continue the survival of the human race. All these good triggers necessary for survival. But what happens when our appetites rule us? When it's not just a trigger, it goes beyond a trigger that we need sleep or we need to eat or whatever, but our appetites rule us instead. So with Peter, he needed to stay awake for 1 hour but couldn't do it. Now, I remember years ago when we were running The Gap, for years we've worked with young people who are disaffected with school and used to being in trouble and quite violent. And so we'd have to be with them all the time. From the minute they arrived at 9 till they went to 3:30, we had to be there 100% of the time. So no coffee breaks, no lunch breaks. We would just snack on the run until they'd gone. Now, I remember one young girl coming to work with us from another city on a year-out team. And within the first couple of days, I found her in the office in tears. And I said, what on earth's the matter? And she was crying because she didn't have her 1 hour lunch break. Because she'd done a bit of teacher training before where you teach, but then you retire to the staff room and have coffee break. Phew, thank goodness. Now I have to go back and face those young people again. They'd have their hour lunch break. And she said, where is the breaks for me? And it's like, well, actually, on this occasion, when we're serving in a ministry with young people, that you take your eye off them, they'll be on the roof, they jump out the minibus, they set the fire extinguisher off. There is a sacrificial time sometimes when we have to put aside our own comfort or hunger. So what happens? Can we manage that inconvenience? Now, I was on a train the other day, and I bumped into somebody who was on the mission in Tibet with Mike Kelly and the team. And they said that Mike had explained to them this particular journey where they had to go 12 hours on a coach and then 24 hours from a place called Shenning to Beijing, 24 hours on a train. And he said, don't worry, guys, I've done this before, but I will never, ever do it sitting up again. We have to get sleeper bunks because it's just too grueling. It's too arduous in the middle of a mission. Well, one town they went into, there was a bit of a kerfuffle. They got arrested. They got fined. But it was all a bit of a scam. And so they weren't able to purchase the sleeper bunks. So they travelled 12 hours on a coach. And the next day they got on the train. And after 12 hours sitting up on a coach, sat up on the train for 24 hours on their way to Beijing. Now, in that uncomfortableness, did Mike say, I said I'd never do this again. That's it. Mission's off. I'm flying home. No, it's unthinkable, isn't it? They carried on with the mission and they just embraced it. And there are times when we are maybe nursing a sick child, caring for a relative. We skip a meal to be there and help someone, where we are bypassing those appetites to help and to be there and to serve. And there's nothing like fasting, for example, to test us in this. I bet you try fasting from food or TV or internet, and you will find hours surface in your life, hours you didn't know that you had, where you could serve Jesus. And so the challenge to us when we look at Peter, it's easy to look at Peter and go, my goodness, Peter, wake up. But in the same way, for us to think we have certain triggers in our life, are they just triggers or are our appetites in charge? Oh, I can't do that. It's too inconvenient. I'm too tired. I'm too hungry. I can't do it. So Jesus said this, watch and pray so you'll not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak. So we need to be aware of our weakness. So we're not all promise and passion, but no delivery. But we're aware of our weakness. We take it into account and we be alert and live by the spirit, not by the flesh. So let's move on to what happens with Peter next. This is Peter's violence. We've had Peter asleep, now Peter's violence. Okay, in Mark 14 it says this, just as Jesus was speaking, Judas appeared with a crowd of men, armed, sent from the chief priests with swords and clubs. Going straight to Jesus, Judas kissed him and betrayed him with a kiss. The men seized Jesus and arrested him. Then one of those standing near drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Then everyone deserted him and fled. A young man wearing nothing but a linen garment was following Jesus. When they seized him, he fled naked, leaving his garment behind. So we suddenly have this, you know, it's quiet in the garden, Jesus praying, everyone's asleep, and then suddenly the soldiers arrive and it's noise and chaos. When I was preparing this, I was so moved, I was just crying preparing it. And every time one of the family would come in and say, what are you doing? I'd start to tell them I would be crying. It's so devastating, isn't it, the circumstance, the events that happen. And now it's a terrible night, Jesus is arrested, everyone deserts him, they all abandon him and run away. But before that happens, as the chaos happens, Peter's response is to lash out in violence and he cuts off an ear. Now, these are some interesting things. The three Gospels protect his identity. It just says someone, one who was there. It doesn't say that it was Peter because it was such an incriminating thing that he did to just lash out. I mean, he must have had poor aim. He only got the ear, not the heart. But, you know, there he slices off this guy's ear. And it's so incriminating that the Gospels are silent on who did it. And it's only 40 years later when it's safe to reveal the identity of the attacker that in John's Gospel we find out that it was Peter. In John 18, it says this, then Simon Peter, who had a sword, who gave Peter a sword? Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. It's very important. Jesus commanded Peter, put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Peter trying to help but getting it wrong. And interesting, in Luke's Gospel, being the doctor, he's the only one that tells us what happens to the ear. Because I quite like to know, well, what happened to this guy's ear? And so this is what happened, Luke 22. But Jesus answered, no more of this. And he touched the man's ear and healed him. See? Another thing that happens in this little scenario is that we spot the author of the story running away naked. You can see we've protected your eyes from the nakedness. It says, a young man wearing nothing but a linen garment was following Jesus. When they seized him, he fled naked, leaving his garment behind. Now, it's highly likely that this is the author, Mark, who is writing this story. And Mark was a young teenager at the time, and his mother Mary, her house was like the hub of the Christians, where the disciples and the believers would go, a bit like the HQ in Jerusalem. And they would hang out there, and possibly even the Last Supper was there. And so Mark would hang around and observe and listen to Jesus and watch the disciples. And maybe he crept after them into the garden to see what was happening. Or more likely even, you know, when Judas left the supper early, Judas went off to betray Jesus and came back with the soldiers. They probably went to Mary's house first, because that's where the disciples hung out. And they would have gone there with the soldiers in the middle of the night. And Mark, as a young teenager, because all he had was a linen garment, he leapt out of bed and ran to Gethsemane as fast as he could to warn Jesus that the soldiers were on their way. But he was too late. And he enters into this chaos and nearly gets taken away himself. As they grab a hold of him to arrest him, he slips out of his PJs and runs home. And it's funny how in Matthew and Luke's gospel, they don't record this incident because it's only special to Mark. And it's like Mark's own little signature in this story saying, hey, I was there. And you read, as you've been reading through the book of Mark, how vivid the account is of that night, because Mark himself was there. And this is probably him running away naked into the night. So Peter's violence. On the one hand, it seems really courageous, doesn't it? If this was a film and we didn't know the ending, you'd be willing for someone to stand up for Jesus. You'd be going, come on, you disciples, you've been hanging out with him for 3 years. Won't somebody stand up for him? And for someone to get their sword out, you'd be, yeah, Peter. And so on the one hand, you can think, well, he was fighting back. He was protecting the master. But it was an inappropriate response to the situation. And Jesus had to say, look, I have to do this, Peter. Why are you trying to stop it again? Put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? So Peter, again, was acting out of a lack of understanding that this had to go. This had to carry on. And, you know, it seems that a number of the disciples were carrying swords because they say, Lord, shall we strike with our swords? And it seems like their sort of security status alert had gone up from amber to red, with all Jesus telling them that he's going to be betrayed and the Jews plotting. And so quite a few of them had swords. But with Peter's reputation, like we said, who would give Peter a sword? Kind of a little bit dangerous, like a three-year-old running around with a large knife. But there we go. So in his heart, he has such a great heart. But the disciples were still thinking it was an earthly kingdom. They still got it wrong. They were still thinking it's an earthly kingdom that they could fight. And so Peter leaps to the defense, but he gets it wrong again, and he mutilates a servant, and Jesus has to sort it out and heal him. So Peter is not having a good night. He's been asleep when he should have been awake, and now he's attacked somebody, and it's about to get worse. Now, the interesting thing about anger is this. It doesn't help, does it? There is a righteous anger. There are times when it's right to stand up and protect or do something. But I remember one occasion as a young teenager going up to my bedroom really angry about something. I can't even remember what it was. And I walked into my bedroom, closed the door. We weren't allowed to slam doors in our house, so I closed the door. And I was so cross, I picked up the nearest thing, which was my hairbrush, and threw it across the bedroom. And as I threw it across the room, I saw it hit the wall and rip right through my favourite poster onto the bed. Oh. And I realised as a young girl, throwing things doesn't help. And sometimes, you know, if we're angry, unkind words or unkind actions can't be taken back. They can be forgiven, but they can't be taken back. And Peter lashed out without thought. And in our relationships, sometimes throwing something is like ripping through something that's precious to us. And Ephesians 4:25, Paul says to us this, therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor, for we're all members of one body. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. Don't give the devil a foothold. And what he's talking about here is our relationships. Our relationships are precious. And he's saying, yes, let's communicate with honesty and with kindness, but not resort to destructive methods, not to allow anger to ruin our relationships. And when it says not to let the sun go down, it's saying, let's not let these things fester in our lives. Because if we live out of anger, out of any emotion, it starts to distort our world. If we're living out of fear, out of our feelings, if we're living out of anger, if we're living out of an unresolved issue, if we won't forgive, what happens is our heart becomes distorted without knowing, and we view life through that lens, and it becomes destructive in our world, not just in the person we fell out with in the beginning, but with everybody. And that's why Paul says here, therefore each of you put off falsehood. Let's not pretend. Let's not pretend now. Let's speak truthfully to our neighbour because we're all one body together. But in your anger, do not sin. If there's something gone wrong, don't sin in that. But don't let the sun go down while you're still angry. Sort it out now. Don't let it linger. Don't give the devil a foothold in your life because he comes in to ruin everything. So living by our emotions is a dangerous path, and this is what kind of led Peter astray, really. And we are called to live out of the Spirit, not to live by our feelings. In Romans it says this. You, however, are controlled not by the sinful nature, but by the Spirit. So I say, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the sinful nature. We're called to live by the Spirit, not by the flesh. Okay, let's move on to Peter's last little thing here. Peter asleep, Peter's violence. Now we look at the last episode in this chapter. Now at the Last Supper, Jesus had prophesied what would happen. And this is what he says in Mark 14:27. Jesus told them, you will all fall away, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. Peter declared, even if all fall away, I will not. I tell you the truth, Jesus answered, today, yes, tonight, before the rooster crows twice, you yourself will disown me three times. But Peter insisted emphatically, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. And all the others said the same. Now, it's interesting, when Jesus says this, the cock crows is actually the term for the fourth watch of the night. Because obviously in those days, people didn't have watches. And so they told the time by the sun and clever maths. And so throughout the night was divided into four watches, and each watch had a name. And the fourth watch in the night was 3 a.m., and it was called cock crows. That's what it was called. And what would happen, a man with a shofar or a horn, not a shofar like getting a car and be driven somewhere, shofar as in what's on the screen, one of those long like horn type things. And what would happen across Jerusalem, they would let out the sound of the horn in two different directions. That's why the cock crowed twice, because it would be in two directions. And so it was highly likely not to be an actual rooster, but it was highly likely to be the fourth watch of the night. And so when Jesus says about Peter's denial, he prophesies really accurately the time scale for it happening. So it wasn't some random cockerel from somewhere, but it was most likely to be the horn blowing across Jerusalem. And so because we don't know for certain, this next picture gives us both options here. You see, we have a cockerel blowing a horn. All right, there we go. And on there, Galicinium is actually the Latin word for the fourth watch of the night, which means cock crows. So that's interesting, isn't it? Okay, so let's go back to scripture. They took Jesus to the high priest, and all the chief priests, elders, and teachers of the law came together. Peter followed at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest. There he sat with the guards and warmed himself at the fire. Now listen to this now. He has just attacked the high priest's servant, right? And instead of lying low or running away, he goes all the way into the high priest's courtyard. I mean, you know, he's just cut off the ear, the high priest's servant who got healed. But now, instead of running off, he goes right into the courtyard of the high priest. He's so courageous. You know, he's been asleep, he's acted wrong with the sword, but he promised the master he would be there, and he goes all the way to the courtyard where he can still see. He goes as close as he possibly can. Verse 68, What happens just before this is this illegal trial going on, and it's just a farce, and people are witnessing and bringing false witness, and people are shouting and accusing Jesus, and they're beating him and spitting on him, and in the end he's condemned to death. And Peter is watching this at a distance. In verse 66 it says, "While Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came by. When she saw Peter warming himself, she looked closely at him. 'You also were with that Nazarene Jesus,' she said, but he denied it. 'I don't know or understand what you're talking about,' he said, and he went out into the entryway. When the servant girl saw him there, she said again to those standing around, 'This fellow is one of them.' Again he denied it. After a little while, those standing near said to Peter, 'Surely you are one of them, for you are a Galilean.' Peter began to call down curses on himself and swore to them, 'I don't know this man you're talking about.' Immediately, the rooster crowed the second time. Then Peter remembered the words Jesus had spoken to him, 'Before the rooster crows twice, you'll disown me three times.' And he broke down and wept." Dangerous times. Peter had said, "Even if it means I die with you." And there he was, right on the edge of perhaps being put on the cross next to Jesus and being taken away. You have to admire his courage. What reckless courage that there he is all the way. But despite all his passion and promises, in the heat of the moment, self-preservation kicks in. And he lies to get himself out. And he denies ever knowing Jesus at all. How desperate is that? Desperate, desperate day. He can't stay awake. He lashes out in violence. Now he denies Jesus, not once, but three times. And he's a broken man. And what we see is that Peter stuck it out for so long until his cover was blown. You know, we don't have a record of anyone else there. There's just Peter. But when the pressure was on, he gave out and he just couldn't do it. Now, it's easy to look at Peter, but there are many times, aren't there, in our own lives when the pressure is on to say no and people want us to say yes, but we should say no. Or the pressure is on that we know we've got a friend who just needs to hear the good news of Jesus, but we're a little bit afraid of going there. And in our own ways, sometimes we're not brave enough. We go so far, but not all the way, like Peter. So the conclusion is this. Let's come to the sort of final part of this. When we look at Peter's episode this night, how wrong it went for Peter, let's look by contrast at Jesus. What happened to Jesus that night? He was let down. His friends were asleep when he needed them. He was betrayed by Judas with an intimate kiss. In the garden, everyone deserted him. His trial is illegal. He is beaten and abused and spat on. Peter denies him, and finally he's abandoned. Now, how did Jesus react to this? This devastating course of events. Does Jesus say, "Well, that's it, then I'm not doing it. You know, sorry. You know, I would have thought my friends could have been there for me. You know, I would have thought at the very least you'd all stay. I thought, okay, try me, but try me properly. Okay, put me through a trial, but don't beat me up unnecessarily. Don't treat me like this. I am Jesus." He could have escaped at any moment. He could have said, I'm just sorry, I'm not. I didn't know this was part of the bargain. I'm not doing it." But no, Jesus unswervingly went all the way to the cross. He didn't give up. He didn't cop out. He went all the way. Why? Why did he do that? Because it wasn't about him. It was about you. It was about us. He did it for us. It was painful. It cut across what his body wanted, what his emotions wanted. He wasn't following after his feelings. The decision he made in Gethsemane carried him through. And he is faithful. And because of his love, he put up with being betrayed and rejected and abandoned and went all the way to the cross for us. Now, if we compare the two of them, here's Peter, okay? Overwhelmed by desires of the body, overwhelmed by his emotions, and ultimately self-preservation. And so this leads to disaster and despair. And this could happen to us. Are we going to live out of the desires and appetites of our body? Are we going to live out of our feelings and emotions? Because this is where it ends up. And preserving ourselves. But we're called to live by the Spirit. But this is what Jesus did. He was submitted to God's will. Do you remember in the garden? God, take this away if you can, if there's any other way. But not my will, yours. He acted then on his decision, not on his feelings. So all the way through the garden, when he could have escaped and slipped away in the night, in the trial, he could have said, this is illegal. He could have summoned angels to rescue him. But he acted on the decision that he had made in the garden when he said, not my will, but yours. He acted on the decision and ultimately sacrificed himself for us. And that led to victory and fulfillment of his mission. And what a victory for all time, that every single one of us who comes to him and says, Jesus, I want this life. I want you. I don't know it in this way. I ask you to forgive me for all the things I've done wrong. I want to go your way and have you in my life and surrender my life to you. And he comes in by his power and transforms our lives. And then we have the Bible and the Holy Spirit and community to walk this life together in adventure. So what Jesus displays was maturity of character. That's the difference. Peter's still learning. Jesus displays a maturity. And this is a lesson for us. Jesus' actions weren't based on his body's wants. They weren't based on what his emotions needed. He didn't promise one thing, but when the pressure was on, didn't deliver. But when the pressure was on, he went all the way. The decision he made in the garden took him all the way to the cross. Ephesians 4 says, let us become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. He is our pattern. He is the one to follow. For us to live out of our decisions, not our feelings. Now let's think about that. How many times do we go, I don't feel like it? How many times do I say to myself, I don't feel like the gym today? I don't feel like going. I don't feel like doing this. It doesn't feel right. Yeah, that we live out of our feelings. But how are we going to make a decision that we decide for Christ to go his way, to follow his will? And we do our life out of our decision, not out of our feelings. To live a life submitted to him, not to be immature and serve our body's appetites. Don't we get grumpy when we're hungry or tired? But can we sometimes overrule that to help, to serve, to be there? To not live in this way. So this is the way of maturity, that we achieve God's purposes in our lifetime. This is the challenge, I think. When Peter was sleeping in the garden, he missed an opportunity that never came back. His friend and Savior was saying, just tonight, just be with me. I don't need you to even do anything. I just want you to be there. But he fell asleep. His body went, oh, I don't think so. The challenge is, will we achieve our potential in this lifetime? We know that I believe God is bringing revival across Wales and a tremendous future, and we have a part to play in that. And are we going to be alert or asleep? In James, it says this, you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. And what James is saying here is it's hard times that makes us mature. It's when the pressure is on that proves us. And when the pressure is on, who we really are counts. And that's when the pressure is on, are we going to live by our decisions or live by our comfort or our feelings? In difficult times, that's the test. So let's finish with this. This is the amazing thing about this whole story we looked at this morning to me. Peter's failure and the detail of his failure is actually Peter's own words of what happened to him. Because we know that Mark wrote down Peter's preaching and his sermons. Now, Peter could have changed the details. He could have hidden his failure. But it's there for everybody to see. And Peter himself was humble and transparent and said, yes, look how badly I failed. My master asked me to stay awake and I was asleep. We were in the garden. I still didn't understand and I attacked. And I went all the way to the courtyard. I was so close. But when it came to the crunch, I just couldn't do it. Look at me. Look how I failed. But what I want you to see is how Jesus was faithful, how Jesus went all the way to the end. I failed. Okay, I failed, says Peter. But look at this. He loved us so much, he went all the way to the cross. And Peter's failure, I called this talk Peter Fails. And by the end of writing it, I wrote Peter's courage, because I was impressed with the man. He was courage, but he didn't quite make it. But this is the thing. Be amazed. Jesus is no quitter. Jesus is faithful in our lives right now. He is faithful to you. He is faithful. He doesn't give up. He is always there. He is faithful. He is the rock. He is the one for us. And so let's be amazed at him, that whatever our failings, Jesus will never fail. So girls, I'd like you to come up. Bethy's going to come and sing us a song now. I want us to just be able to meditate as we finish on the faithfulness of God in our lives. I'd like to pray during this song. And what happens to Peter? Well, you'll have to find out next week and read your little Gospels of Mark during the week this week to see what happens next, because it just gets better and better. Okay, let's just pray. Lord Jesus, as Beth comes to sing to us, we thank you that you are a faithful God. However bad we mess up, however much we get it wrong, your love is unchanging. And I pray you'll come and minister us now by your Holy Spirit through this song about your faithfulness and kindness to us. Amen.